We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can get all your Pack-A-Day updates by following us on Twitter at Pack-A-Day Podcast. And remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, or Spotify. And of course, you can always check us out at cheeseheadtv.com. I'm Kyle Fellows, and I'm joined by Andrew Mertig. Maggie Loney is out this week, but we're excited to be back for another Monday edition of the podcast. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm kind of frustrated, Kyle, thinking about leaving the podcast and then trashing everybody on my way out the door, a la Devondre Campbell. I'm kidding. Devondre's comments, totally fine. Can clearly see where he's coming from. He was frustrated with the scheme and stuff. But you know what I always say, Kyle? Why burn a bridge when you leave when you can just napalm it?
That sounds like very Andrew Mertig, like, you know, very Andrew Mertig style. Yeah, no, I think his comments have been really interesting, and I think it is illuminating, and obviously it's easier moving on from that scheme, right? Like, we don't have to defend that scheme because that's not what we're doing anymore, but just does shed some light on what that defense was trying to work through last year and some of the frustrations. So, it's interesting. But we got a fun show ahead of us today. You want to tell the people what we're doing?
For sure. Yeah, I just one last thing on the Devondre comments. I did like the way that he kind of went back and clarified that, like, he does think Quay is a really good young player and they were just asking him to do the wrong things.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of the salvation of the whole thing and kind of came off in a positive light. And Devondre, I mean, you know, you get it. He's frustrated. He, you know, felt like maybe that divorce didn't go the way that he wanted it to. And certainly I can understand being really frustrated with this scheme as a player, but yeah, you're right. We do have kind of an interesting concept for a show. Last year, we conducted a project to discover where the best players at each position actually get drafted. There's always some assumptions regarding this question, but I wanted a way to get actual evidence. So, like, one way or one question to consider is, how do you define great players? I wasn't totally sure. There's a lot of different ways I think you can go about doing that. So I just settled on all pros to try to avoid being super subjective. I used the all pro the AP, Associated Press, the Pro Football Writers of Association, and the Sporting News all pro teams, both the first and second teams that they have them from 2013 to 2023 as my sample. That's why you won't see necessarily even numbers across positions, because on any given year, there could be different selections for each organization, and they could have three wide receivers on the first team and three wide receivers on the second team. So you end up with a pretty long list of different players that have made all pros.
Yeah, this was a really interesting project to me last year. And Andrew, put in a ton of work to make this happen, just to kind of compile all this data. And it really does help you see if you want a player to have a decent shot of panning out, what round you need to think about drafting a player in the draft. Like, how long can you wait and expect that they might hit? Obviously, there are exceptions to this, but there are also some pretty significant trends that we found in this that we, you know, you want to consider that going forward. And so I asked Andrew, can we bring this project back and specifically discuss the positions that the Packers are most likely to target in this year's upcoming 2024 draft? Obviously, the Packers could target a multitude of positions in the draft. They could do whatever they want. They could take the best player available and take a wide receiver and, you know, do whatever. But there are some assumptions that there are a few places in this roster that they are going to need to invest. So we're kind of going to target those spots. So running back, even with the addition of Jacobs and the return of Dylan, I think will be on their priority list to invest in for this year, but also for the future. Offensive line is a need and a really strong position group in this class. So we're going to talk about that. Defensive back, linebacker as well. So we're going to work through these position groups. We're going to look at running back, tackle, guard, center, all those offensive line positions, linebacker, corner, and safety. So we're going to hit them all and talk about what it would look like for the Packers and where they need to target these positions in the draft if they hope to have some success there.
Yeah, and my hope in going through this was really like, do we need to invest a premium pick to get a great player at position X? Now, if you're looking for a serviceable starter, a rotation player, even a Pro Bowl level player, this will not necessarily give that answer. This simply tells us what is the percentages over the last 11 years in the NFL of an all-pro player hitting in a certain round of the draft at this position. So running back, for instance, kind of an interesting study. There were 36 different running backs. And when I say different, I should also clarify that this can be the same player over and over, right? So if Christian McCaffrey makes the All-Pro team 6 times in 13 years, or 11 years, I should say, then he's going to count 6 times towards this. And so that's going to show up as a 6 count in the first round. So of the 36 that counted as All-Pros, 13 of those were drafted in the first round, 15 in the second. So interesting, there's actually more in the second than the first. 4 in the third, 3 in the fifth, and 1 UDFA. So 36% of all pro running backs were picked in the first round, 41% in the second, but 22% were found in rounds 3 or later, which gives you hope that you can find an impactful running back a little bit later in the draft.
Yeah, the running back conversation is super interesting, I think, because things have shaped a little bit differently than maybe we thought like a couple weeks ago. Like, I think we thought like Aaron Jones is probably going to be back with this team for a year or two. He's going to be that kind of change of pace receiving, give you some, you know, jitterbug speed kind of profile. And then you're looking for that big guy who can take the beating, maybe be your goal line, you know, close out games kinds of things. So now things have totally shifted to where you've got your, you know, battering ram with, I mean, plus, right? Like, let's not reduce Josh Jacobs to where he's just the battering ram guy. But you've got Jacobs in the fold, and then you've brought back Dylan. So you've got lots of size, and you don't necessarily have that more elusive speed back. So I think the profile has shifted to what maybe we could expect the Packers to be looking for here. The other piece of this, I mean, you highlighted in the second round, has kind of been the sweet spot for these running backs. And I think maybe like the ghost of like CEH still haunts a lot of people. Like, he snuck into the back end of round one, but it's so true. Like, taking a running back early just to take them there doesn't make them a better prospect. Of course, that's the same year that Jonathan Taylor came out, was a second round pick, and you know, those kinds of things. So I guess the question here, while we're talking running backs, Andrew, is like, does this draft class really have, you know, we want to target a running back in the second round because there's a big hit rate there. Are there second round running backs available to the Packers who would be worth considering, I guess, is kind of like the question.
Yeah, for me, there's 4 running backs that are close to that second round valuation. I actually don't think all 4 will go in the second. I think probably getting pushed into round 3. Mm-hmm. But those would be Jonathan Brooks, who I think is the most complete running back out of all of them, and is young. So that fits into the Packers sort of model. But he does have the injury concern, you know, still doing some recovery from a late season injury at Texas. There's Trey Benson from Florida State, who I think is maybe the more electric of the players in this group. Bucky Irving from Oregon, who is a smaller, really shifty player. I know he didn't test super well, and that maybe was a little disappointing for you and I, who like Bucky Irving a whole heck of a lot. But yeah. What he has put on tape, I think, is super impressive. And then Will Shipley, and I think that's a little bit of a surprise as a second-round valuation, but for me, he's like kind of a more elite pass-catching back. And, you know, of course, maybe not as complete as somebody like Jonathan Brooks, but I think he does that have one skill set that is going to put him in some pretty consistent day two conversations. How about you?
Yeah, so we have basically the same first three names. So, like, to me, like, that's a pretty good indication. We see Shipley very differently. I'm not a huge Shipley fan, although, like, later in the draft, like, I think he'd be a super interesting skill set to add, but he's not in that group for me. But huge Irving fan. Right now, like, I've got Irving, Benson, and Brooks all with basically the same grade, and they're all, like, bubble late second, early third round kind of players. I guess as much as I love Bucky Irving, we're talking about all pros on the show. And so I don't know that I see like a really clear path for Bucky Irving to be an all pro kind of a player just because of the workload he probably gets. I wish he came in a little bit heavier at the combine. That was kind of a big, like, even more than the athletic testing. I was like, oh man, I really wish he pushed 200 a little bit more. But I think if you're looking for like a maybe, like Trey Benson and Jonathan Brooks, I think have that chance. Like, it may be a long shot, but like, I think those are the two guys that, like, maybe that's the case. And I think, you know, you draft them in the second round late, like 58. Yeah. Like, maybe that's a little bit of a reach, but like, I think that that's the range where like you could justify it for those two guys if you really wanted to. But otherwise, I think you're looking at probably dipping into the third, fourth round to find a running back in this class.
Yeah, I think, you know, one player that we didn't mention who I'm a lot lower on than most people, Jalen Wright out of Tennessee.
Yeah,
I think he has the skill set that he could be an all-pro kind of player if he figures some things out and goes into the right scheme. I actually kind of love the fit of Wright when you have Josh Jacobs and A.J. Dillon in front of him. I don't know if the Packers would invest that kind of capital, but if he can figure out some of the like vision issues that I saw on tape and then the balance stuff, which isn't always the easiest thing in the world for a running back to correct. But if he can, I mean, watch out. Like, that dude is electric.
Yeah, Jalen Wright, we're the same on that. Like, we, you know, differ on Shipley, but I think a lot of people love Jalen Wright. And I'm with you that he's probably probably sixth running back on the list. And I think that for me, he had so much space to work with at Tennessee. Like, because of the offense they run, he was afforded that opportunity. But in the NFL, if the Packers were to take him and he was their space player, then, like, there's a skill set there that's really interesting. But again, like, I'm not hoping to line him up and run him into the offensive line 15 times a game. So, you know, that's an interesting one. But it's not a great running back class at the top, but there's a lot of interesting skill sets that you could drop into your roster and have some fun with later on.
Yeah, if you want to talk about, like, players we think could be like solid starters in the third round, I think that would be a conversation that would probably go on for quite a while.
It's funny, neither of us mentioned Blake Corum, honestly. Like, and he's kind of in that running back six-ish range for me. And I think if we didn't, there'd be a lot of duplicity in bringing him into like the running back group that they probably have now. And I just think that they need a different skill set. But it's interesting. You ask probably five different people and you'd get five different, very, very different answers of how this group of running backs stacks up in this class. It'll be interesting to see how they fall.
Yeah. So we move from one draft class that maybe is seen as a little weaker into one that definitely the consensus is very, very strong. That is offensive tackle. I'm combining left tackle and right tackle in this conversation, but 37 of the all pros in the last 11 years were drafted in the first round. So 37. And then 8 in the second, 1 in the third, 6 in the fourth. All of those 6 are David Bakhtiari, FYI. 1 in the fifth and 2 UDFA. Both of those were Jason Peters. So 67% of the AP nods are going to first rounders. Another 14% are second rounders. The rest made it for one season or our future Hall of Famers, David Bakhtiari, Jason Peters. So Moral of the story, take your tackles early.
It's finally here. March Madness, one of the most exciting sports weeks of the year, and it's about to be made even better by combining it with the excitement of Prize Picks. Testing my skills on Prize Picks over the past year has been my favorite way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few quick taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play, and the best part is that you can make your entries in under 60 seconds. Prize Picks has quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types, and that's what makes Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. March Madness is always fun. A ton of epic moments, buzzer beaters, and unparalleled drama. But this year, it's going to be even more epic than ever while using Prize Picks to bring that excitement to an entirely new level. This past week, I used Prize Picks to make selections on Victor Wembanyama, Lionel Messi, Connor Bedard, and the Badgers' Tyler Wahl. There are so many options to choose from that you'll never run out of new ways to use Prize Picks. And the absolute best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Just download the app and use code PACKADAY and receive a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Eating healthy can be a challenge. If you're anything like me, I'm trying to make 2024 my best year ever. I'm trying to eat right, maintain a high level of energy, and make the right choices for my own personal health. But as much as I want to make the right choices, running to the butcher or the high-end grocery stores every single day to get a fresh quality cut of meat just isn't feasible. Thankfully, that's where Good Chop comes in, and it has completely changed my life. I'm so thankful that I found Good Chop because now I can get 100% grass-fed meat like ribeyes, filet mignon, organic chicken breasts, pork tenderloin, and so much more delivered directly to my door. Last night, cooked up organic chicken breasts, made my famous chicken curry. Yes, that is a true story. It is to die for. You would love to try it. And the chicken was incredible. Fresh, tender, unbelievable flavor. The best part was that I didn't even have to go to the store to get it. And Good Chop's price per meal starts at just $3.74, and their boxes are fully customizable with delivery to your door on your schedule. So go to goodchop.com/packaday120 and use code packaday120 to get $120 off across your first four boxes. That's code packaday120 at goodchop.com/packaday120 for $120 off. goodchop.com/packaday120 using code packaday120. What are you waiting for?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, this one is jarring, honestly. Like you said, unless you're Bakhtiari or Peters, you're not an all-pro unless you're a first-round pick. And I would guess that this has something to do with elite athletic traits. It's probably less likely the guys who are huge and extremely athletic fall in the draft. Like, they get snatched up early because they're rare. Green Bay is in a unique place where they currently have a pair of offensive tackles who can certainly start in the NFL. Are they likely to be all-pros? Maybe not. Like, Tom might have that trajectory, like, depending on, like, how he develops and those kinds of things. But if Green Bay wants an upgrade, the first round is the place to look for that, right? Like, there are a ton of tackles worthy of a first round pick in this draft. I haven't finished tackles. I have two position groups that I've barely touched, and that's defensive tackle and offensive tackle. So I've got to get to this group. But I've heard multiple people say that I really trust their evaluations, that they've got 7-8 offensive tackles with true first round grades, which is pretty nuts. Like, when you're not talking about like fringe first, second round guys. These are like legitimate first round talents. So it's a crazy class, and the Packers could have an opportunity to maybe take a swing and try to find an all pro.
Yeah, I would say right now I probably have a 7. I haven't finished all of my grades because I'm still factoring in some athletic scores. But I would say about 7, but some of those are not going to play tackle at the next level.
Yeah, so, that's true.
You know, for instance, I'm including Graham Barton in that, who is probably a center guard prospect.
Yeah.
But some really, really talented offensive linemen. And speaking of interior offensive line, guard also like is an interesting way to look at it, but maybe a little bit different. We thought tackle, it would lean pretty heavy into the first round. Guard surprised me. 24 first round picks were all pros from the guard position, 7 in the second, 12 in the third, 4 in the fourth, 2 in the fifth, and 1 UDFA. So guards don't get drafted in the first round all that often, but the ones who do tend to make up the most dominant segment of guards around the league. 86% of all pro guards are drafted in rounds 1 through 3.
Wow.
So we think that you don't need to take an interior offensive lineman early, but the results show otherwise. And then center, kind of related here, we have 12 centers with first-round draft pedigree that were all pros, 2 in the second, 2 in the fifth, and then 6 in the sixth, but that's all Jason Kelsey. So, again, interior offensive line may be a position where you can find players later, but the best of the best are getting drafted early. 55% of centers that were all pros were drafted in the first round. Now, is that somewhat a perception because the player was drafted high, so they should be good, and people don't know how to evaluate centers for all pro voting? Maybe. But again, like the best of the best, unless you're Jason Kelsey, it's almost for sure that you were a first or second round pick.
Yeah. Yeah. Guard is an interesting conversation because of where Green Bay's interests may be come draft weekend. We know that Green Bay is typically targeted prospects to play interior offensive line who do have a history of playing tackle. You mentioned Graham Barton. Washington's Troy Fatanu is another player who fits that description, who plays on the edge but might slide inside to guard. But Green Bay hasn't really had a history of taking guys to play interior offensive line early in the draft, right? Like Elgton Jenkins is close, but he was a second round pick. But the Packers have found their interior guys almost exclusively outside of round one. But this project indicates that the elite guys on the interior get snatched up in those first 32 picks. So it'll be interesting to see if Green Bay breaks their tendency with a lot of talented guys in this class available. I mean, I think Graham Barton is an interesting player because Josh Myers is up after 2024. So, I mean, the versatility there, like he can play guard, he can play center. It'll be interesting to see, like, do they value a guy who can upgrade a tackle, or do they value guys who can come in and play that interior spot, which historically, you know, you value the guys on the edge a little bit more, those tackles. But we're seeing, like, with the emphasis of wanting to run the ball and the Packers spending, you know, some money there, bringing in someone like Jacobs, maybe putting some big guys who can make a big difference in the interior would be something that they would look to do early in this draft.
Yeah, and we saw the spending in free agency on guards around the league go up drastically. Like, the average contract for, you know, a starting center in the league jumped a lot during this free agency period. And so it does seem that other NFL teams are valuing guard quite a bit more than they have in the past. So it'll be interesting to see what Green Bay really feels about that. We'll kick off the defensive conversation with linebackers. This is a weird position because at some point around 2015, they started to combine inside and outside linebacker, which makes no sense. I would have thought maybe they would have gone the other way. So these numbers are a little distorted because somebody like Chandler Jones, who definitely is not an off-ball linebacker, shows up on the list twice. Von Miller, TJ Watt, etc. You can go on and on. But 42 of the 72 All-Pros in the last 11 years were drafted in the first round. 15 in the second, 12 in the third, 1 in the fourth, 3 in the fifth, and 3 UDFA. So 95% of the AP nods are going to first or third rounders. So even though the edge guys are distorting that number a bit, guys like Luke Kuechly, Roquan Smith, etc. are dominating the position. You might get a Fred Warner in the third round, but players with the unique athleticism to be elite linebackers are just simply not falling in day three.
Yeah, this is interesting. I was talking to Dan Dahlke, who writes up the linebacker position for Cheesehead TV's draft guide, and we were trying to figure out, like, what is Green Bay going to do at linebacker? Because they need at least one, like maybe two for, like, being hopeful here. And free agency and the well there is pretty much dried up. And this draft class isn't really great at linebacker. I think that's one thing I know we agree about, because I've seen your linebacker rankings and the grades that you put on these guys. There's a few guys that are really interesting, but they're all imperfect prospects. And this data that we're talking about here suggests that waiting until day three really isn't a great plan, right? Like, I think Blake Martinez was like a fourth round pick, but like getting a player that contributed like Blake did in round four is like kind of the anomaly, not the rule, right? If you want a guy like Edgerrin Cooper in this class, you're probably going to have to take him in the second round. I'm not sure that that's going to be incredible value. Otherwise, you're looking at guys like Junior Colson, Tommy Eichenberg, Cedric Gray, who might be available a little bit later in this class. But history tells us if you want a good one, you got to take them early. I guess the question is, and this is what I was talking about with Dan, is like, are there really any linebackers worth taking, especially early in this class, relative to what else is going to be available on the board? It's going to be really fascinating to see how the Packers address this, because they have to.
Yeah, and the other really fascinating thing about linebacker, we always talk about tight end like this, like players just, well, tight end, safety, I guess, both positions where players just typically really struggle early in their careers. And you can't expect a lot of return on that rookie contract. So, yeah, you invest a first-round pick in Quay Walker, and we don't know if Quay Walker is a good NFL player or not going into year three. And by the time the Packers have to figure out if they're going to pay him or not, they still may not have a concrete answer. You look at Patrick Queen in Baltimore. He was a player that, like, for three seasons, they were like, is this guy any good? And then they bring in another player, ironically Roquan Smith, who is drafted really high, underperformed in Chicago, gets jettisoned to Baltimore. Suddenly, he's one of the best linebackers in the league. And Patrick Queen starts playing really well, hits free agency, and now is in Pittsburgh. And I can't think, Kyle, of any linebackers in my lifetime who are like stars in year one outside of Brian Urlacher, Luke Kuechly. I'm sure there are some, and somebody's going to yell at us who listens
probably.
To this. Yeah, well, and Micah Parsons
is kind of an edge, yeah, like
really unique, right, like
interesting
positionless
guy.
Kind of player. So, but yeah, I guess, you know, that would fit in as well. So like, it's super rare that guys are impactful early. So if the Packers invest premium draft capital in a linebacker, what are we really expecting out of that player right away? I also do think it is kind of interesting. Brian Gutekunst mentioned the idea of maybe trading some draft capital for a veteran player at some point. Linebacker seems like a pretty good spot to look there. A second safety could be a pretty interesting spot to look there as well. Washington just brought in two veteran linebackers, and they do have the
Jamin
rookie
Davis
from Kentucky. Jamin Davis, who is probably perfectly within that window of a guy who might be on the precipice of breaking out. Or it could at least be, you know, a solid running mate next to Quay.
But he's buried, right? Like, he's their fourth guy, right? So like, he would be one to try to pry free. I did think that that was interesting when I saw those other guys coming into Washington.
Yeah. So let's take a look at the secondary. Cornerback, 27 of the 50 all pros were drafted in the first, 8 in the second, 1 in the 4th, 6 in the 5th, 1 in the 6th, and then 7 UDFAs. So here's a weird result. 70% are taken in the first two rounds, but 14% are UDFAs. Corner is typically a premium position in the draft, but there are some players available later who hit. This could be a result of the newly found value in slot corners, like you think back to a guy like Chris Harris Jr. Another interesting phenomenon is that elite corners typically just don't stay elite for very long. And then you also get guys like L'Jarius Sneed, who absolutely come out of nowhere and suddenly dominant players. Safety, another fascinating study, 25 of the 52 are drafted in the first round, 10 in the second, 9 in the third, 2 in the fourth, 5 in the fifth, and 1 in the seventh. So 48% of all pro safeties are drafted in the first. That's a pretty low number compared to what we've seen in the rest of the study. So there are actually more AP safeties drafted in rounds 2 through 7 than in the first. So the hit rate, pretty widely distributed when you look at that compared to other positions.
Yeah, that's a lot of hits in the second and third rounds. Yeah. It kind of feels like, it's just kind of how it plays out with safety. Like, you have to be an absolutely elite safety prospect to be selected in like the first 20 picks of the draft. And then it just feels like good safety prospects tend to fall into the second, maybe even the third round, right? Like, I'm just trying to think of some good examples here. Like Brian Branch last year, we knew he was a good safety, right? Fell into the second round, 45th overall in the second, where the Packers were originally, you know, picking there. Jordan Battle was a good safety. We knew he was a good safety in college. Went 95th overall in the third round. Has played well in the league. Daxton Hill, Lewis Seen, first round picks, but they went 31 and 32 late in round one. When the, really throughout that process leading up to the draft, they were kind of going in that like late teens to early to mid 20s range, and then went just a little bit later than a lot of like draft media had been talking about. Brisker went in the middle of the second. You know, it's interesting. Safeties tend to fall just a little bit further than maybe they're talked throughout the process. And then when they still hit when they fall. I think that's the cool thing about safeties is like, it doesn't mean that they're not as good of a player. It just means you get them a little later. And so that might be good news if you're hoping the Packers can grab one to pair with Xavier McKinney.
And of course, Xavier McKinney, another great example of exactly what you're talking about. A player who had a lot of first round hype,
yeah,
fell into the second and now has become one of the better safeties across the league. So hopefully that's an interesting way to take a look at how the Packers, you know, could potentially take a look at how they need to address their needs based on position, and really where those big hits have come from across the league in the NFL draft. But that is all the time that we have for today. This has been the Pack a Day Podcast. You can find Kyle on Twitter @Packer_pundit. You can find me @AndrewMertig. Remember to also follow @PackadayPodcast. You can catch Kyle, Maggie, and myself every single Monday. And next week, we'll be back with more off-season conversation. Thanks for listening. And as always, remember...
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.